This week's episode of Still Untitled, The Adam Savage Project, is brought to you by Squarespace.
Well, did you watch the Super Bowl?
Yes, I did.
Did you see those the Jeff Bridges commercials?
Yes, I did.
Explain to me what's going on there.
Jeff Bridges made an album. It's called Sleeping Tapes.
Okay.
It's music to help you sleep. Jeff Bridges narrates your sleeping experience. He talks about humming. He talks about walking through the woods. It is really, it's kind of amazing. You can buy it from a website that he made using Squarespace. It's that easy.
It's like a full-length album of Jeff Bridges, the dulcet tones of the dude.
Like it is a narrated sleeping experience. Mm. He comes on, talks to you about how sleeping is important, how people don't get enough of it. I highly encourage you to check it out.
All right.
Dreaming with Jeff.
Dreaming with Jeff.
Check it out.
He made that website also using Squarespace.
Made with Squarespace. If you want to buy the album, it's pay what you want. You can get it for, you can give, the money goes to charity, all of it. So I suggest giving a normal, reasonable sum of money. It is pretty amazing. It was made with Squarespace. The whole website's made with Squarespace, including they have this cool tape player because it's the sleeping tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like an old cassette tape with a play, pause, fast forward, rewind button on it.
So weird.
It is very, very skeuomorphic. But like I said, it was all made with Squarespace. If you want to build a website with Squarespace, you can go to squarespace.com, sign up, and use the offer code Untitled to get 10% off and show your support for this podcast. Now on with the show. Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
I was perusing Reddit yesterday.
As one does.
As one does. And somebody was saying, help me convince my boss that we landed on the moon.
Oh, my God.
Did you see this one?
That's find a new job. Like, that's just get out. You're not going to fix that problem.
And his boss's argument was, I've been to Cape Canaveral. I've seen that thing. It is a piece of junk. There's no way that landed on the moon.
So he's using the Douglas Adams cricketers argument. Hey, these people who waged the genocidal war across, no way this spaceship flew. Yes.
Right, exactly.
Oh, God.
And somebody in there used an argument, which is one that I came across recently, which I greatly appreciate, which is the burden of proof isn't on you to tell him. The burden of proof is on him to tell you.
That is actually super, super true.
Let's be clear where this argument lies. Pretty much everyone in the world agrees we landed on the moon. So if you don't agree, it's not up to you to say, hey, prove to me we did. No, we're pretty much convinced of that. It's up to you to prove to us. And by the way, just seeing the ships, yeah, they do look crunchy. NASA is a handmade, everything in NASA is handmade by people.
Bespoke to space.
When I visited the spaceship room in Huntsville, Alabama, the spacesuit room, that's the best part about seeing all that stuff is that being a machinist and a maker, I can see the maker's marks on everything, and it's beautiful. And yeah, that is crunchy because these were prototypes that went.
And it was decades ago.
Not only was it decades ago. Go ahead.
Right, and for all the technology that we have, it's still meatbags and tin cans.
And everything that they did to get to the moon could be done on a pocket calculator. The guy's like, how do they have the computing power? And it's like, you're asking something when I don't think you even have a realistic idea. And all this was said in the thread.
Yeah.
The guy has no realistic idea of how much time, what the computations were like anyway.
It's the math is calculus. It's not that hard, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
And it didn't need to be 12 zeros precision. It just needed to be three or four. Just get close enough.
Yeah, you just need a steely-eyed missile, man.
That's right. What are the forces? Interestingly, what are the things at work, culturally, but also that convince people that it's not possible? Why is there a generation, or why are there people, you think? Like, is it because of science fiction? Because
I think that we crave. So I'm going to go all the way to Vonnegut here and say that everyone craves families. Everyone craves groups. And I can't remember the specific names, but Vonnegut has names for specious groups that we have membership in just by nature of luck.
Zoroastrians and all that?
Like Hoosiers.
Okay.
Like born in Indiana. Hoosier, yeah. Who cares? But they feel good about it. So, Californians, New Yorkers, it's like everyone feels like they need to be part of
it. It's a connection.
Group. Right. I think it's a very reasonable understanding of why religion is so successful and useful to so many people. Mm-hmm. I think that some people look at something that everybody else is doing and feel a sense of membership in going in the other direction. and they find a cadre of people who agree with them. They're still a flat Earth society.
Well, so that's like a, you're saying people want to belong in groups, but also at the same time have the instinct to go against.
But you also, what you want your group to feel special. I think you want your group, you know.
So there's a critical mass.
I mean,
and this goes all the way up to anti-vaxxers and the whole thing. Yeah. Like the thing that's happened is 50 years ago, the three people in the country that, or the 300 people in the country that didn't believe the Earth was round would have no way of finding each other. Right.
Yeah, well, like, there'd be a zine.
Right. They'd put personal ads in the newspaper and they'd be like, hey, think the Earth's flat? Come by Wilshire Presbyterian Sundays at 2.
Man.
And now they just, you just Google it and everybody finds themselves and there's message boards and, you know, Reddit subreddits and all that stuff.
So I got to interview, this is a little bit of a tangent, but I got to interview Miranda July on stage a few weeks ago. And if you don't know who she is, you guys know, she's a writer, she's a filmmaker, she's an actress, and she does really interesting, complicated, and by complicated, I mean difficult to take sometimes.
I don't get it.
Work, yeah, no, in every one of these genres. But if you, I submit that if you really give in to what she's doing, she's actually working on a kind of a very long, deep meditation on connection. On human connection with each other and the weird ways in which we do it, manipulate it, and find ways to find comfort in it. So there's a book she has called It Chooses You that she wrote while she was finishing a screenplay, I think for the movie The Future.
I saw that, yeah.
And the book is, she was like in her house in LA, not working, procrastinating, and she'd get the Penny Saver every week for free. And LA still has a Penny Saver.
The Penny Saver is the, like the weekly newspaper that has all the deals and it's like free classifieds, right?
Yeah, free classifieds, exactly, yeah. Right? And in this age of Craigslist, there's very few of these left, but she'd peruse the Penny Saver and she would call people and ask them if they'd be willing to be interviewed about the object they had for sale. And this is a book-length set of interviews with
this
people
is great.
Who are selling like a pair of jeans for $15 or, you know, an old umbrella. I mean, for like $8. And she'd go to their house and talk to them. And it was really unique because she was kind of shocked in the book that almost everyone she visited didn't have a computer.
Oh, sure. Well, so why else would they be in the Penny Saver?
Right. But this whole world that we completely take for granted is not part of their purview. And they all had these really rich and sweet and difficult lives like we all do, except that it sort of felt like visiting another country.
But it was next door.
But it was next door. That was tangential to the idea of human connection. But
well, so last night my wife and I were talking about this because I found out, to my surprise, that she didn't know what Tinder was. Oh. I am not in the Tinder market, obviously.
Tinder's a dating site, right?
Tinder is a
heterosexual dating site?
I think it's heterosexual.
Grindr is the
maybe
gay
both.
One?
Okay, cool.
But the key factor of Tinder is that you get a picture of someone and you swipe one way to say yes and you swipe the other way to say no.
Sorry, I should say, I don't know if Grindr's the gay one or if it's just non-het or if it's everything else besides het. So.
Tinder is the cisgender one.
Is the what?
The cisgender.
The cisgender.
What? The sissy one.
What is CIS?
Cis just means non...
Right, but what does it stand for?
It's a Latin word, I think. It comes up in chemistry. Because when you're talking about... Okay. Yeah. Anyway,
I
don't know.
I looked it up and I still am kind of mystified by it. Anyway, Tinder is a cisgender. Got it.
So I had to explain Tinder to Gina. And then she looked at me like, this is... And then I explained that people figured out the Tinder hack almost immediately, which
is... Right. Wait. Is Tinder... Do I have this correctly? Because I've never looked at this.
You're out of the market, too.
Is this... You scroll through, and when you see someone you like, you tag them, and if they've tagged you...
Yes.
Okay.
But you only see if both people tag. So some enterprising, presumably young man, realized that if he just says yes to everything, then Tinder goes from being a selective service to more of a buffet. And as I explained this to my wife, she had a look of both surprise, consternation, and finally kind of a little bit of horror.
Before is that really how it works?
Yeah.
Will that break the service?
I think that's probably why Tinder was really popular for a little while and now not so much.
No, I think it still really is popular.
Oh,
I have no idea.
Anyway.
I don't think we're the right people to be discussing this.
We are not, absolutely.
Really non-single dudes.
Yeah, I don't know what the point is.
The point of the story was that we were talking, we were basically the last, like we started dating in 1996, which is basically the last wave of dating before the internet.
Mm.
Like there was no, she couldn't Google my email address.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She couldn't figure out who I was by using the internet.
Yeah.
She didn't have an email address, I think, when we first started dating. I was on the internet, obviously.
Wow.
But
she didn't have an email address?
I don't think so in 96.
96?
I think she got it in 97.
Wow.
Because, like, if you didn't have a computer, she didn't have a computer.
Yeah, yeah,
why
yeah.
would you have a computer? She's not a nerd. She's a normal person.
She's a civilian.
Normal.
And like, all of that, like, that has changed the dynamic of dating in a profound and terrifying Facebook. Way to me.
We haven't talked about this on the podcast, but I met my wife online.
Yeah.
I was on nerve.com, which was very...
Oh, I remember
it still
nerve.
Exists, but it was very popular in the early 2000s.
Very hip.
Very hip. She was on salon.com's dating site, but they both used the same backbone. The same, API from Spring Street Networks.
Many of them are all owned by the same company.
Yeah, but back then, I think those two were different than the other ones.
They had a very targeted audience.
And so, that was one where, you know, you sent out, your ad was put at the top of search results in direct proportion to how recently you'd edited it. So one of the ways you could game the nerve system was by editing your profile by a letter or a consonant or a piece of punctuation every single day.
Okay.
And
that's weird.
That seems like that.
Like, no, if you're going to try to game that type of system.
Well, you just like, want your, you, so here was, I did a bunch of dating that you should read that as too much through nerve. In the 2002-2003, and then somewhere late spring 2003, I was like, you got to get your act together. You're doing this show called Mythbusters. You don't know what you're doing. You got to figure out your job. You got to hunker down. So I completely gave up the dating. I gave up everything, and I just concentrated on making season one of Mythbusters. And then we wrapped that in I believe somewhere around November 10th, 2003.
Okay, so this is before you were a known quantity.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. The show had been airing.
Okay.
The show had been airing. Yes, the show had been airing for since the summer.
Okay.
So, yeah, I was just starting to get known, and you could go see it because we'd been making a bunch of episodes.
But I assume people, like, you were starting to get the side eye, did I go to high school with you?
Yeah, there was, yeah.
But people didn't. Like, now you walk down the street, people kind
of recognize
you.
November of 2003 was about the point when I started to get stopped on the street on a daily basis.
Okay.
So we wrapped in New York on the 10th. I went out dancing at a Bulgarian disco with my friend Tammy, and we had one of those epic sort of crazy New York... She's one of my oldest friends.
Bulgarian disco, I'm not even going to ask. We'll have to talk about that some other time.
Freaking awesome. It was just crazy scene. And, like, you know, I stayed up all night, like, drinking coffee and talking about, you know, shit, and then got on a plane, headed back to San Francisco, and came back to San Francisco to find a message in my inbox on Nerve, which... So if you're a dude, you almost never get message. You're sending out all the messages. And this was before, like, winking and half messaging and all the various things that happen.
I have no idea. Facebook, you said a bunch of words, but then I know them individually, sure. But together they make no sense.
Right. Somehow there's something more than just, hey, and hey, now there's all these variations on hey.
Layers, which is culturally shielding you.
Yes.
But they're just the same thing.
Right. And they're also sort of like Tinder, right? There are ways to let each other know that you're sort of interested, and you can anyway.
In a low risk way.
So there was a message from this this woman, Julia, and I messaged her back. We got on the phone and we went on a date. Our first date was a week and a half later or so. That was like, I knew by the end of the first date that this was somebody really special. And by the end of the second date, I was pretty much just holding my tongue to ask her to marry me.
Wow.
I swear, it really was like that. We were married less than a year later.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And we have several friends who met online.
I have a bunch of friends who met online at this point.
And been married more than a decade.
The first one got married in, I think, 97 or 98. And I was like, well, that's not going to last. And they have two kids, happily married. You know, the kids are getting ready to go to high school college or whatever.
They want to get in on that early testimonial money.
Yeah.
Right?
A buddy of mine in New York in the early 2000s got contacted by Nerve because, according to them, for a period of time in 2002, he had the most popular Nerve ad of any man.
That's fascinating.
Now, and he was freaked out by this.
Yeah, that's not.
He was like, I don't want to talk about this. You're gonna muck with my mojo. Now, the thing is he's a screenwriter. He's an amazing writer. And his profile was beautifully written. And it had all the kind of pathos and complication that he does. And so you really got that. So, like, when people saw it, this was a guy who... So I don't know if you remember, but Nerve would have a flavor of the week, like a profile they'd put up of like someone particularly awesome every week at the top of their site. He would show up in San Francisco, look at the flavor of the week, messenger, and have a date with her.
Wow.
Right? Like, I was like, that's some game right there. Cause I was flailing all over the place. By the way, I'm a basket case when I'm single. I was a basket case.
I mean,
I was a terrible single person.
At heart, you are very clearly a nerd.
The Miranda July story you told of people who, and her interviewing people who posted, you know, for sale items physically on paper, tangibly. It's same thing could be said for, I think, the, you know, outside of Craigslist, there are people who still post personals that way. And that would be really interesting. I'm sure American Life has done.
Yeah. And Craigslist personals with no pictures back then. There was no pictures, which just felt like a really weird sort of thing to do. But like some people really dug the interactions before you were infected with what people looked like.
Well, and like talking on the phone, like going from, hey, I'm going to send you an email. To talking on the phone, I have to imagine is a big, because like my first job, like I had a bad job out of college, and then my first real job working in the industry, I did all of the work with that over ICQ.
Right.
Like we literally did all of our planning for Ars Technica when we launched the site over, you know, instant message and email and an occasional IRC.
And I remember like, you'd have like 5-hour conversations with a girl on the phone like in the 80s and the early 90s.
Is that something kids still do or is that something that just doesn't happen
anymore? It's Snapchat, right?
No, my kids will do, what do you call
Skype
it?
Or Skype or FaceTime or whatever?
They'll do Skype or FaceTime.
As a regular means of communication.
Yeah, just sit there at the end of the night and like one of my boys will do homework while his girlfriend's doing her homework via Skype and they're just talking to each other while it's like they're in the room together.
I mean,
amazing.
It's kind of incredible.
You're right, yeah. And it's something that you don't take into account. The story about your friend who was at the top of Nerve, that story, you hear that sometimes. I think there have been really cool features written about like the most popular people on different services on OkCupid, like the most quote unquote desirable people. And it's a combination of algorithms because like it speaks to
people also who can game or sense the algorithms and play to them.
But then there's only so much that can do, but it's more a reflection on that culture, on modern dating culture.
Well, and this is the interesting thing about having 16-year-olds, right? Because like...
That was a nice segue.
Thank you. Thank you. We had originally planned to talk about some dad stuff. Both my boys now, they're turning 16 in a very short period of time.
Do kids drive at 16 still?
Uh-huh. We actually just made the appointment for me to take him, one of them, thing two, to the DMV next week to sign the paper. And get this, both parents have to sign. In person, in the DMV. There is no other option. You have to... He can leave the country with one parent's signature, but he can't drive without both in person in front of the... Anyway.
Responsibility. Okay. It's good.
So they both boys have girlfriends. One's been steady for...
This is a terrifying thought.
I know. One's been steady with his girlfriend for 16 months now. And the other is like 5 months, I think. It's fascinating. So,
hold on. Should we be talking about this? Is this okay?
Yeah, this is okay. I'm not going to get into too much more detail because this is their personal lives and I'm not going to, you know, reveal too much. But I will tell you that when Thing 2 first came home with his girlfriend, and they're both delightful.
We've met them both. They're lovely girls.
When Thing 2 first came home with his girlfriend, and he was really excited for us to meet her, and she's delightful. But they came in and I could see, you know, all that stuff, right? He's totally in love and he's intoxicated and youth and all of that. And in that 1 second of meeting her and seeing him with her, I realized like Trinity being downloaded, how to fly a Huey helicopter. Oh my God, right. He's going to have to go through all those years of heartbreak just because that's what life is about. And I don't mean like life you know, well, yeah, you do suffer, right? Like you go through relationships and they are awesome and they hurt and it's this roller coaster and that's part of existence. And it was like, I hadn't even considered it until that moment.
Up until that point, you're going to keep him alive.
Right.
Keep him alive, keep him educated.
And make sure he doesn't like have food on his lips, right? And that is pretty simple. But seeing him there, it's like, oh, here's a whole nother swath of the world that I cannot protect him from. Right. I know it's totally intense. Well, and yet, you know, also I will say this because you're a new dad.
Thank you.
You're part of, you know, you're now conversant, right? You can actually kind of start to talk about stuff.
We have conversations. We talk about feelings.
Right.
We're frequently full of feelings because we're 2 years old now.
Right. And when you're talking about those, you are very clearly in your head thinking about what is the long tail of how I phrase things, how I say things, how I frame them.
I'm setting the seeds of my own demise 15 years from now in the future. Right. Yeah. I mean, I could be.
And you're giving tools, right? And like every time you talk about a way to do... Every time you talk about how to deal with a negative situation or a positive situation, but mostly negative ones, you're giving them tools for navigating the world. I will tell you, at 16, you're no longer doing that. At 16, you are watching them use everything you've given them, hopefully.
Well, I mean,
it's not about saying the right thing. It's about avoiding saying the wrong thing.
Well, even more, it's like... they're now their own people. They have their own opinions about stuff, and now they take your stuff and they're like, yeah, but don't buy it.
If they don't have the moral code that they need to live, the moral and tools that they need to live, you're not going to give it to them at this point.
Right. Exactly. But so like, everything you've said has already happened, and now you're just sort of like keeping them fed until they go.
So what's my clock? What's my clock? Like, when does the switch turn? Like 8?
No.
5?
No. Well, with
10?
Girls, I have no idea, because I only have the subset of boys. I will say that I do think about that with everything I've ever said to them. I mean, and look, it's not like I'm anything close to a perfect dad. I get, you know, all have our difficulties, but I really have tried, as I've helped them navigate the difficulties of life, to really think about like what would I have wanted to be told? Because I went through everything. I went through everything that they're going through. Yeah. In fact, I wasn't nearly as cool as they are, or as confident, or as self-actualized as they are. But I do see them, and I give them ideas and think about how, you know, you realize it's like you're running a subroutine, and what do you want them to do with that subroutine later? And recently, one of my sons was having some difficulty, and he gave back to me stuff I'd said to him. And he's like, right, but you said that this shouldn't feel like this if this happens. And I was like, oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that. That was great advice from me at that moment. I wasn't you retained it and you're using it. And, you know, both of them have a genuine emotional sophistication, which I didn't have at that age. Really pleased by that. So that's something that I feel like generationally is really awesome to watch happen in your
kids. They grow up faster.
They grow up faster, but you and your wife can give them, and when you have kids.
I mean, if you don't already, Norm.
That you know of.
I'll raise a robot.
A robot dog.
Yeah. The thing for me is I always think about, right now we're reading books. We're reading a lot of books. Yeah. And I've delved back into the well of things that I loved when I was, you know, probably not 2 or 3 years old, but the things I remembered reading as a young child. Yeah. And those are story time books a lot of times. So I'll read them so we're reading Paddington, just as an example. There is so much that I didn't understand about Paddington as a youth because of cross-cultural stuff, like just English-American stuff.
The allegory of immigration that it is?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, he was a stowaway from South America. Where I didn't know what the fuck Darkest Peru was, right?
Right,
like,
exactly.
Is it
okay?
Maybe this is racist. I'm not sure.
What is the marmalade an allegory for?
The cake is a lie.
So I've been explaining that, you know, Peru is in South America. It's a place far away, and... the very literal level of this, I didn't know what a stowaway was for probably 10 years after I read Paddington.
Yeah.
And thinking
about romantic.
It's easy now because it's all literal. But when you get to stuff, when you start talking about stuff like feelings and you start talking about, like the other day, she wanted to know why we're nice to other people. I said, be nice to mom. She said, why? And I said, well, that's a really good question. It's because you love her. And you want her to be happy, and being nice to her makes her happy.
Yeah,
and
read
it's just
Machiavelli.
About...
It's also going to help you with the other side of being nice.
I think this lies all the way down.
Yeah. when the boys were about two and a half or three, feeding them was kind of like throwing meat into the lion cage. I had these little city chairs that were like blow molded plastic, and they'd strap into those on the kitchen floor. And I would put food, and you know, at the end of dinner, there'd just be like a ring of food.
I assume they're hand eating at that point.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. And then like this, and then they get a little older, and we're sitting at the kitchen table. Right, they're probably about three and a half at this point, and yeah, somewhere around there. Anyway, thing two doesn't finish his dinner, and I'm like, "You got to finish your dinner," and he's like, "I'm not hungry," and I said, "Yeah, you still got to finish your dinner," and he's like, "But I'm not hungry," and I'm like, "You know, there are kids in the world who don't have an and as I got to that, he put his hand on mine and said, "We'll talk later."
Oh, boy.
This is when he's three and a half?
Three and a half.
Oh, boy. I'm so glad I have a girl. What do you wish you had been told when you were 17? Like this is something I think about a lot. Like, what at different points in my life.
There's actually interesting thought experiments. One is, what would you do if you could go back to high school now? Not something I've ever been interested in doing, but I understand it. And it is a version of exactly the question you've just asked, is what would your 17-year-old self have benefited from hearing?
The first part of, you know, what would you do if you could go back to high school?
Yeah.
That becomes less and less desirable as you go older. And as you, I think it's more, if you wish you could go back to high school, I mean, one, you can't, but it's a good sign that, you know, look forward as opposed to looking back.
Yeah, well, totally.
And that goes away. That desire completely goes away.
The desire to go back to high school, I think a lot of it comes from the intensity of emotion you feel at that age, right? When you're 16, 17 years old, everything is more intense.
Well, it feels like life and death. That's the brilliance of Buffy.
Yeah.
The brilliance of Buffy is they put actual life and death stakes on all the feelings of high school. Like, you sleep with your boyfriend, and the first time you do, he turns into an actual monster.
Right. Yes.
Who will then try and kill everyone you love.
Yes.
That's the brilliance of Joss Whedon.
That Jenny Calendar episode where Angel turns evil is the saddest thing ever in television.
I've never watched it. I started watching Firefly, which I think is a gateway drug for Buffy.
It totally is.
So if Firefly goes well in our house,
13 episodes.
Yeah,
Firefly is phenomenal.
I watched it originally out of order because of Fox,
right?
And so I bought the Blu-ray years ago. It was just like $5 or something, and I've been ripping stuff. And we started watching in the right order, and it is really cohesive this way in a way that it wasn't.
You watched
before.
The pilot?
I watched the pilot.
Is that the line? My favorite line. Let me be clear. When I kill you, we'll both be, you'll be awake and facing me, and we'll both be armed. When he's accused of, you're going to kill me in my sleep.
Yeah.
Oh, such a good line.
Someday
I'd love to talk to Joss Whedon about Raymond Chandler, because I'm quite sure
absolutely.
He's an aficionado of Marlowe.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
The second point of what I think we've talked about this before, the thing that I think to tell any 17-year-old and even up to, you know, 30, 40 years old is, it's never too late to start.
It is never too late to start. Right. You have more time than you think.
You have more. Exactly. That's
and, the, and the other one is, and this is one in which the boys really seem to have taken, is if you're feeling shitty in a specific situation, that's not something you just have to bear because of who you are. In the 70s, I didn't feel like there was anybody really paying attention. My parents were very encouraging and very loving and all of that, but I felt very lonely. And so there was a lot that I just took and swallowed because I thought, well, this is the way things are. And I made it really clear to the boys, like, if you are dealing with someone and you are feeling crappy, you don't have to keep feeling crappy. Now, this presumes you haven't, like, you know, done something horrendous.
Wronged them in some
way. Right, right. And, you know, also we all will. That's just part of being human. But really, for the most part, you don't have to just endure feeling shitty. You have the right to ask to be let out of that, or to, you know, talk about it, or to process it in some way that you don't have to feel crappy about it. And they both really have a solid sense of self and right and wrong. And that's just so great to watch.
I think
it makes you feel like everything else can fall into place.
I mean, that's the goal, right? Yeah. Is that you don't have you don't have a kid that has self-destructive feelings or feels like they have no future or any of that stuff, and that they can go out and do whatever they want.
And I know they're empathic.
And I know we have to wrap this up soon, but just to make it clear, like what I just said is lovely and it's totally true. It is exciting to watch my boys at this. I say this from the vantage point of failing at parenting all the time, including even last night, both my wife and I, in two separate occasions, got overly angry at a boy and the other one stepped in to make the situation a little lighter, and then we resolved it. But it's not to say that any of this has been part of a grand plan. It's like most of the time you still feel like you're chasing a giant balloon across the landscape.
Do the best you can every day, right?
And you're in a privileged position where you have twins, where the best thing you can do for them is to make sure they have each other.
This is true.
Norm, who is a twin.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is true. And there was a long period where they did not get along. Currently, they are very important to each other, and in ways that I don't even understand. And I really appreciate that about seeing them that way.
I think that's as good a place today to wrap it up, because we have 32 seconds left.
Okay.
See you guys next week. Thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye.
This episode of Still Untitled, The Adam Savage Project, was brought to you by Squarespace.
They're the ones who have a service that allow you to build websites pretty easily. Mm-hmm. Someone like us, or even Jeff Bridges, as we mentioned earlier, can build a website.
Have you listened to the tapes yet?
Not yet. I'm going to try it tonight.
Yeah, you should try it tonight. Highly recommended.
Nightmare or awesome.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you, the soothing, dulcet tones of the dude will lull you to sleep. And if you want to build your own website with Squarespace, you can. They make building websites fast and easy. You don't need to know any web stuff. Like, you don't have to have Notepad even. You can just go in, use their editor, build a website that looks awesome like Jeff Bridges' website, and support Still Untitled by using the offer code UNTITLED when you sign up for Squarespace and get 10% off. Cool. See you guys next week.
Bye.